You're listening to the Pop Czar Podcast.
Mother, I bring you fresh prey.
You are so kind to me, daughters. Now, let's take a look at him. Well, Ethan Winters. You escaped my little brother's idiot games, did you? Let's see how special you are.
Yes, Mother.
Yes, Mother.
The State of Gaming.
Welcome back, everybody. It's the State of Gaming podcast from your pals over at Popzara Press. That's right. It's one of our monthly things where we talk about video games. We talk about sales numbers, estimates, rumors, all that fun stuff without all the sleaze, without all the slime. Okay, maybe a little sleaze and a little slime. But anyway, welcome back. This is Nathan Evans, managing editor at PopZara.com, back once again with PopZara's own senior games editor, Mr. Corey G-Man Gallagher. Corey, welcome back.
Hey, thanks. Great to be here.
The little clip we played at the beginning will be very, very recognizable to most people who are listening because it is a clip from one of our big games for the month, which we'll get into in a minute. Depending on how you perceive the game, it's a very intimidating clip, and depending on how you play the game, maybe a little disappointing. But we'll get into all that because you can't talk about video games without a little controversy. And if there's no controversy, we got to make some up because that's how it works too. So State of Gaming for is it 2021 already?
It is 2021, if you can believe that.
Yeah.
It's been that way for about 6 months almost.
6 months. I mean, you can never tell anymore. It's like we all want a redo of 2020, but we're not going to get it. State of Gaming for May 2021. The usual format is we talk a little bit about the biggest games of the month. We segue into a little bit of sales figures, and we kind of a little bit of cleanup at the end. This month will be no different. So speaking of that, Corey, what are the big games available to people for the month of May 2021?
Well, we have a few listed here. Four big ones and a couple that people may not have heard of. The four big ones I think we're all very familiar with. We got Resident Evil Village, the latest in that survival horror series. We've got the Legendary Edition of Mass Effect, which includes the first three games in that series. Andromeda is not included. I feel like a lot of people are happy that that's the case. I thought Andromeda was fine, just saying. We have Biomutant, this kind of open worldy exploring kind of thing. I've been playing quite a bit of that lately. The remaster in HD of Shin Megami Tensei 3 Nocturne, which playing quite a bit of that too. It's a really fantastic remaster, definitely worth a look if you like that game. And the two games that are a little bit smaller are the re-releases of the Famicom Detective Club games. First time we've seen them here in the U.S.
I'm going to say, so technically a re-release for our Japanese listeners, but a release for American listeners.
Yeah, and this is not the first time they've done this. We saw the release for the first time of the first Fire Emblem game, I think, a couple months ago.
I would have never thought, like 20, 25 years ago, that not only would we see Japanese games get localized, but we would see like 25 to 30-year-old Japanese games get localized. Better late than never. But interesting thing is that Nintendo is doing them. They're not relying on fan dubs or whatever.
Right. And don't get me wrong, you know, there's nothing wrong with fan-translated stuff. It's all very good stuff. But
Corey, there's often many things wrong with fan translations. Punctuation, not among them.
Well, for those of us who just want to be able to play the games, I think we'll take what we can get. So it's definitely better to get an official localization like this. Don't get me wrong.
Well, again, I mean, you know, for years, the number one Nintendo game that everyone wanted localized was some version of the Mother games, which I think we had.
Mother 3, specifically, yeah.
Yeah, which we still don't have, but...
We probably never will. I don't think they're ever going to localize that game.
You never know, though. I mean, would you have ever thought in your life we'd ever see the Famicom Detective Clubs?
So on the one hand, I don't think I would have. On the other, the content of Mother 3 is just not going to fly at this point. I think it's just how it's going to be.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you've checked out the site lately, but we had a review. I think I did the review, which I never do. There was a book that came out called Ask Iwata, published by, I think it was published by Viz. And have you had a chance to see it?
I haven't had a chance to read the review, but I've definitely heard about the book.
Well, one of the two personalities in the book that, I mean, apart from Satoru Iwata himself, you know, we had, of course, Shigeru Miyamoto. But the other one and the instigator of the whole book was Shigesato Itoi. He's the creator of the Mother series.
Sure.
And he's the one when he was – did you know this? He was also a voice actor. He was an actor, a writer. He's the one who started – the newspaper, the Hobo Nikan Itoi Shinbun, a.k.a. Hobo Noichi. And that's the genesis of the Ask Iwata series. And if you read it, if you have a chance to read the Ask Iwata, there's basically, I would say 25% of the book is dedicated to Shigesato and about how Satoru Iwata helped basically save the Earthbound series.
How about that?
from destitution. Yeah, so it's an interesting story. If you're into a game that you probably aren't as familiar with as you should be, read the book and you'll be a little more familiar with it. So there you go. Little plug.
Yep. But going back to the actual games we're talking about here, we started off with Resident Evil Village, which, again, it's the eighth game, the V, the L, and the L spell V-I-L-L. You know, it's an eight. It's hilarious. Yeah. Point being, I played through this. You've been playing more of it than me because I think you played on the super hard difficulty, right?
Yeah, I was one of those dorks. By the way, can I do full disclosure? We often have a little fun at the expense of video game journalists, as you should, because they should be mocked sometimes. But let's just say this. Here's the thing. I like games with variable difficulty because some games are not evenly made. They're not well made. And there's always those sticking points in some certain games where you get to this point, you can't get past it. There have been some efforts to rectify these little stop points. Nintendo had their little, what did they call it? When, like, a
They called it Super Mode.
Super Mode.
Yeah,
super so
mode,
like,
basically where they would play the game for you.
They play the game for you, but there would be, like, repercussions for it. And there'd be, like, no accumulation and stuff. That's fine.
Right.
Certain games allow you to change the difficulty to get past certain points, but I've noticed a handful of new ones don't let you do that. And Resident Evil Village is one of those things where if you get stuck on hard difficulty, you're screwed.
Yeah, if you get stuck, you're stuck. And even on normal, I would say it's not the easiest game in the world, especially early on. You don't really have enough ammo or weaponry to do much, and yeah.
Well, I'll just say this. It's not exactly Dark Souls difficulty, but I've complained about it before. There's a little Dark Souls in this game, and I think there's a little Dark Souls in a lot of games, and I get it. Dark Souls is great. It's wonderful.
It's a little Dark Souls inside all of us, if you think about it.
Well, the real friends are the ones we made along the way. Resident Evil Village, a lot more difficult on hard than it is normal. I'll just say that.
Yeah, no kidding. When I played through, it took me about 8 hours. It is a solid, solid game. I think if you're a fan of the kind of style from Resident Evil 7, that more survival horror-focused style rather than the action-based games, like from, I want to say, 4, 5, and 6, I think you'll get that out of Village. But it does also kind of harken back to 4 a little bit, too. There's definitely somewhat more of a focus on combat. There are more weapons. There's a shop where you can buy upgrades. There's a mercenaries mode, which is fantastic. A whole lot of fun.
Can we talk about the shopkeeper a little bit? Because Resident Evil 4 is very, very famous for the "what are you buying" guy.
Yeah.
Look, I apologize to anybody who might be offended. He's kind of the scariest creature in the game, if you think about it. He's pretty grotesque.
He's gross-looking, but more importantly, he's scary from a plot perspective, too. We never really talk about where the shopkeeper came from or what he's doing or what his plans are. And toward the end of the game, when Ethan Winters, our hero, asks him what his motives are, he won't say.
Well, here's my thing about the shopkeeper, and this is my only slight against the game. And this is not a slight. This is just a slight against the game, is that Resident Evil Village introduces cooking to the gameplay. And I get it. Every game has to have a cooking element. I get it. But it doesn't
really,
fit.
To explain, it's less of a cooking like you might think from like Cooking Mama or Minecraft or whatever. And it's basically the way that you gain permanent stats in Resident Evil Village.
But it's exactly like the cooking, like the sound effects. It's exactly like Final Fantasy XV or Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, it's the same sound as Breath of the Wild, isn't it?
Yeah, you hear the... He's like, yum, 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 join me. It's like, I just picked that crap out of a dirty river. I'm not eating that
crap. Just shot that chicken myself. Like, did you even remove the bullet? Like,
yeah, exactly. So it's like, but you know, the man weighs like 600 pounds, and he's got a big fupa poking out of his gut. So maybe he knows a little bit about food. But
hey, maybe so. That's the kind of person who wouldn't ask about food, really. Anyway, so as not to, you know, stick on one game for too long, I will say that I really liked it. You know, even playing on normal where the game felt pretty short. One thing that bothered me, and I mentioned this in the review that we either have up or are putting up soon.
Oh, it's on.
Great. Village is separated into basically 5 sections. You got your main hub area, which is the village itself, and you have 4 dungeons. And generally speaking, the dungeons are great, except 2 of them are tiny. Like, I would say the first dungeon, which is a castle, and the final one, which is a factory, those are the most significant parts of the game. It'll last you about 3-4 hours each. The other 2 are maybe an hour long.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them has no combat.
Yeah, there's been some hullabaloo about the inequities between the different locales. I haven't quite got to that part yet, so I don't know if I hate it or not. I'll just say this.
Are you still in the castle, or where are you at this
point? Oh, no, I don't want to say how far I am, because I might embarrass myself, but I'll just say this. What's funny is that 100% of the marketing has focused on the first part of the game.
the first part of the game, which you are through and done with very quickly.
And what's her name? The
Lady Domitresk.
Lady Domitresk. She's become something of an icon. Like, let's just say she's the baby Yoda of 2021 for a lot
of
people.
Yeah, I'm over here thinking, like, can we all stop pretending she's attractive yet? Or
yeah, she's. I mean, I guess some people are into that sort of thing. But she's like you said in the review. She comes across as like Mary Poppins meets like Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, yeah, it's a very interesting character. The problem is that having all the marketing focused on this character, who, without spoiling much, she doesn't stick around.
No, she does the Resident Evil thing where she turns into a big mutant creature, and no spoilers, but you'll find that out with like an hour and a half in the game.
Because the game is so short, yeah. Like our big headliner character is done and dusted within the first fifth of the game, really.
I'm not going to get – I think we should move on from Resident Evil Village, but I will say one thing. The game does try to incorporate some of the stuff from the remakes, the recent Resident Evil 2 and 3 remakes.
Yep.
I think it does it better than Resident Evil 3, which I don't think is a very good game. But I do think Resident Evil 2, which is a masterpiece, and I think the remake is worthy of the title. Resident Evil 2 introduced the tyrant or the nemesis, whatever you want to call him, stomping around looking for you, and it's genuinely terrifying. This game tries to do that. I don't think it does it as well, but it does attempt. So I'll give it some credit.
Yeah, it is pretty cool in that sense. Like, again, it's a great game. It's like Resident Evil. If you've really enjoyed any of the games, it's probably worth a look because it's got action, it's got horror. Definitely more of a balance between action and horror than 7. So if you maybe avoided that one because you don't like the you don't like it being quite so scary, yeah, this is a little bit easier on the nerves.
It's scary, but it's also ridiculous, which is Resident Evil. But
yeah, they really go hard into the ridiculous side of things. Anyway, moving on from Resident Evil, as you were saying,
I got to say one last thing about Resident Evil. It looks really good, and I want to say this:
it looks fantastic.
No one ever talks about Resident Evil. Capcom's, I think it's the RE engine or whatever it's called, but it's powered like some of their best games they've ever made. And it's very impressive. Like, I'm not here to talk about the tech, but you played, what is it, Ghouls and Ghosts Resurrection or Ghosts and Goblins?
I did. It was very difficult.
Yeah, like, the Resident Evil games use this engine. Like, the side-scrolling games use this engine. This is a really good engine, and it looks really good no matter what you play it on. So there you go.
It does. Hey, one last thing before we move on, though. Actually, you're right. I've got to say one other thing. If you play this on PS5, it has haptic feedback and adaptive triggers. And if you haven't had a chance to play the PS5 game with a PS5 controller yet, that is the reason you want to buy this console. It has nothing to do with graphics. Haptics is the coolest thing ever.
There was a story that came out last week, actually. I'm glad you mentioned that, where they're going to be introducing drivers to allow the haptic feedback to be coupled in PC games. So
that's really cool. Actually, yeah, I saw that too. You're right.
So there you go. So
what was the most recent one? There was a certain game that came out.
There's a big one coming out. It's a goodness gracious. I don't know which game it is, but it's a big game.
That story that you mentioned was associated with a particular game, but I can't think of which one it was. Well, anyway, without getting stuck on that, maybe we'll think of it by the time we're done. Mass Effect Legendary Edition. Have you played the Mass Effect games, Nate?
I did not play the Mass Effect games for two reasons. One, the controversy at the time, which, by the way, total BS. Total BS. Took me away. And you know me, I'm not too much into role-playing games, but I have been rediscovering stuff I didn't have time for, 15 years ago? 10 years ago?
Sure. Yeah, you're so
2007,
old.
2007? 14? Wow, 14 years ago. Crazy. Remember Sexbox?
Yeah. The big controversy around Mass Effect at the time was Fox News claimed that Mass Effect contained full sex scenes, like completely nude, you could see everything sex scenes, which obviously if you had ever played the game, you know that's not true. And they were asked if they played the game. Of course they didn't, and they said it didn't matter because they knew, and so on. Yeah, it's a mess. Anyway, we're long past that. There's new controversies every week these days.
I
so.
Have to give a gaming journalist some credit. We just made fun of them. I'm going to give one credit. Was this Jeff Keighley? Is that his name?
I think so, yeah.
The guy who does all the
Game Awards guy.
Yeah, he's become something of a shill. But back in the day, though, he was the one who did the work. He was on TV, he was defending the gaming industry, and he did it very intelligently. He didn't embarrass himself. And he's the one who stuck it to Fox News and all the other muckrakers. So good job, Jeff. Wish you stayed that way, but whatever.
You remember that picture of him sitting in front of the Doritos and Mountain Dew sign?
No, but I believe you.
Yeah, no, that was definitely a thing for a while there.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mass Effect Legendary Edition. Basically, this takes Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3, remasters them, and puts them all together in a collection, so you can give it a shot. This is cool for several reasons. One is that Mass Effect 1 is very old, and it shows its age these days. So having a remastered version, even with the gameplay souped up a little bit, very nice. Other thing, you can carry your save data over between these games. So you basically play as the same character throughout all three of them, and that means that you have this massive, I want to say, 100-hour experience with the same character, the same party members that you interact with, all kinds of stuff like that. It's really cool.
Mass Effect's one of those things that even if you don't play the game, it kind of indemnifies a lot of what's right and wrong about the game industry and like this relationship between the players and the
Right.
developers. Because I know you're going to get into Mass Effect 3 and about how that ended ignobliously for everybody involved, right?
Mass Effect 3, the ending of it, obviously a lot of people were very excited for it, but what ended up happening is that the ending didn't really impress people. This is probably the first time we actually saw an, I guess, a more direct offensive from game journalism sites against the people who play games themselves. And it kind of led into the Gamergate controversy that we heard about back when, and which is still kind of boiling today, and so on and so forth. We're not that kind of show. We're not going to talk about it,
Nah,
but
we don't talk about
it
that.
was definitely the start of that whole situation for sure. More importantly, though, sorry, just 1 second, I got to clear my head here.
It's a lot to remember. It's a lot of BS to remember, just
Yeah,
so you
there's a
know.
lot of stuff going on with Mass Effect specifically. But the ending of Mass Effect 3 actually got patched. They changed it up a little bit. It plays a little differently now. If you didn't like it then, you might like it now. They actually announced a new Mass Effect game, and Mass Effect 4 is coming out at some point, which obviously this leads up to, and that's pretty cool. One thing that's not very cool that might upset you if you're a big fan of Mass Effect 3 in particular, they did not bring the multiplayer mode from that game back. And in case you didn't know, Nate, that multiplayer was great, solid. People still play it.
Well, not on this one, they're not.
Yeah, not this one, of course, but they still play the old one. There's actually talk of if there's enough of a response from the fans, they might bring it back, which to me sounds like they will bring it back because again, people love it. It's a lot of fun.
Well, I wonder because we saw this happen with the Halo Master Chief Collection, where they remastered the stuff, but they didn't quite stick the landing when it came to the multiplayer. And so it
Yeah.
caused people to rush back and play their old Xbox discs on the new console
Right.
instead of the new versions.
So they got all that patched up these days. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Well, I mean, the infrastructure for online is much better now. It's much more robust on any console you play, and
That's very true.
but I'm wondering if the investment to bring, it's one thing to remaster old games and do like APIs and all that, but it's another thing to like completely like upgrade the infrastructure for netcode and everything. So I'm wondering, yeah, how much of it is going to be an issue or not. I don't
Hard to
know.
say, hard to say.
I
I
don't
mean,
know.
they might end up just focusing on the multiplayer from Mass Effect 4 and just making that similar because, again, it was solid. It was a lot of fun. You got to gear up your character, customize the weapons that you use, play with your friends. It's like a big horde mode. A lot of fun. Anyway,
Woo.
without getting too much further into Mass Effect, because again, we're trying to get through these big, heavy-hitting games. The next one we've got here is Biomutant. Now, have you heard of or played Biomutant at all?
Okay, full disclosure, I run a video game site. Excuse me, I run a pop culture site where I should know about this stuff, and I believe that, forgive me for saying this, I think the publisher sent us a copy.
They did,
But
yes.
Corey, I did not even hear about this game until you told me about it, and that's
So this
after the
game.
fact.
Right. So this game got a little bit of attention. It's been in development since I think 2017. Also, I just want to mention every video game site I've ever worked for, the editor is probably the person on the staff who knows the least about video games. Not sure
That is
how that
true. That
works.
is true. I'm very, very much representative of how this works.
Yeah, it's shockingly common, folks. You wouldn't believe. Anyway.
You should see me get through a tutorial.
Yeah, man, just Cuphead, worse. Anyway, Biomutant. So Biomutant basically it's weird. That's the bottom line, is that it's weird. You basically play as a little furry animal creature that you can customize how their fur looks, their markings, what their body shape is like, their stats and stuff. And you go explore this post-apocalyptic world, a little bit like a crazy version of Fallout. And the big thing about Biomutant that makes it different from most of this kind of game is that there's a narrator. If you think of Biomutant, it's kind of like a nature exhibition show, like David Attenborough. That's what you're getting with this narrator. It's great.
That would be great if they actually got David Attenborough.
Yeah, he sounds a lot like him. I'll give him that. And this is cool because this guy's always talking, no matter what you're doing. There is no dialogue in the game. The dialogue is all the characters make blah 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 noises, and the guy like translates for you. Like, oh, he said that blah 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 blah. He said this and he said this. It's really cool. It's interesting.
Did the Skull Reaver games have a narrator back in the day? Do you remember those games?
Soul Reaver.
Soul
I don't think
Reaver.
they had a narrator. I think what we're going for here is something like that game Bastion that came out a few years ago.
Yeah, Bastion. Okay. Yeah,
Bastion,
you love
Hades,
Bastion. You
Transistor. I do. I love all of Supergiant's games. Biomutant, not as good as the Supergiant games, but still pretty good. It's a lot of fun. It's great fun exploring, looking around, collecting loot. Less fun is combat. You've got several ways of fighting enemies, melee attacks, the sword or an axe or whatever. You got guns, you got psychic powers. The unfortunate part is that nothing about the guns is any good. Just pick up a gun, you're fine. Melee combat's really weak. Powers are exciting, but you have a limited amount of mana. Just focus on guns. It's fine.
I was looking at the developers of this. This is interesting because it says here it's developed by people who left Avalanche Studios. And for those who don't
Sure.
know, they made the Just Cause games. So
there's not very many of them, and actually this is that studio's first game. I think it's called Experiment 101.
Yeah. I looked at the box cover. When I looked at the box, I thought, oh, they're bringing back Star Fox Dinosaur Planet.
It looks like a cutesy kind of game, and for the most part it is. I don't know. Again, the weird is the big central thing here. Like, it's very strange. There aren't a whole lot of games like it outside of the, you know... Obviously, it's an open-world game where you explore and collect loot and stuff, but the presentation is bizarre. Definitely worth a look. Don't think it's on Game Pass, so you might want to wait for sale.
Well, I'll just say this. It's on the PlayStation. It's on PC. It's on PlayStation 4. It's also on the next-gen consoles, which is a little surprising, considering it's technically almost an indie game. So...
Well, one quick note about that. If you're going to get it on next-gen console, you probably want to skip the PS5 version, which is known to have some technical issues. Definitely for the Series X version instead of the PC version.
Really? That's interesting. I did not know that.
I think they just ran out of development time is what it sounded like, and they're eventually thinking about fixing it. But yeah, at the moment, the PS5 version is not so great.
They'll fix it if it merits it. So.
Exactly. So the next game.
Yeah.
We've got Shin Megami Tensei 3 Nocturne, the HD remaster of that game. Ooh. This game came out back in 2007, I think it was.
Think so, yeah.
Might have been even earlier than that. Yeah, 2007-ish. Fantastic RPG, one of the classic Shin Megami Tensei games, these kind of dark RPGs with demons and so on and so forth. This remaster of it is great. I've been playing it on PC. It looks good. It plays good. It's really smooth. Like, compared to the original game, it's rock solid. It has Dante from the Devil May Cry series.
So what console did this originally appear on? Was this PlayStation 2?
This was a PS2 game, yeah.
Yeah, PS2. Yeah. You know, PS2 games, you know, let's just be honest. PS2 was a great system, but the early PS2 games versus, like, the latter PS2 games were, like, a different generation apart. They really did a lot with the hardware towards the end of the system.
And that's the case with pretty much every console. Like, it first comes out, and they're still trying to get their bearings, and the earlier games for a console feel like slightly better-looking game from the previous console. We see it with the PS5 even now. But as time goes on, and we see more and more impressive takes on the hardware... Like, you'll definitely notice it in the games.
But everybody see. But you liked this remaster quite a bit.
I did. It helps that the game itself is great. I mean, it's just this really dark adventure kind of game where you play as a half-demon character who goes around trying to figure out what happened to post-apocalyptic Tokyo.
So at what point did the Shin Megami Tensei games diverge and become separate from Persona?
Persona is a Shin Megami Tensei game. That's they're all part of the same series.
Yeah, but they don't call them Shin Megami Tensei Persona anymore, do they?
No, I don't think they ever did. They called it Revelations Persona.
Yeah, so I mean, like, we've kind of consolidated. Now we're strictly in, like, Persona territory, right?
No, not especially. Shin Megami Tensei 4 and its sequel, I can't remember what the name of the sequel was, but those came out on 3DS a few years back, and they're all hotly loved. Nocturne obviously has got a remaster. Shin Megami Tensei 4, actually, or 5, is coming out on Switch pretty soon. I think either this year or next year.
Yeah, so, you know, let's not get into the Switch thing, because then we'll get into Switch Pro, which probably doesn't exist. So, yay.
Yep. So, aside from that, those are all the big ones. Did we talk about Returnal last month? I can't remember.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about Returnal. But we could talk about Returnal in a little bit, because Returnal does show up a little bit, quite disappointingly, if you think about it, a little later in the show.
That's true. So there's a few other littler games I want to talk about. For instance, talk about the Famicom Detective Club games, and that's pretty cool. Again, the fact that they've brought these games over is something else. I mean, we never would have expected that. That is, you know, back in the day, like, we just kind of accepted that certain Nintendo games were never going to see official localizations, either because they were too old or because Nintendo had really hardcore content restrictions back in the day.
That's true.
Yeah, but now here we are. I mean, these are solid, I guess I'd say adventure games. Maybe visual novel is a better choice of terms, because there's not really so much puzzles as making sure that you go to the right place and talk to the right people at the right time. You can't really, like, mess any of this up. So it's really something that you play if you're more interested in kind of the history of adventure games as a whole or slash visual novels. Mm-hmm. Or you just want to see, like, I mean, Japan love these things. Like, there's no way to explain how much Japan love these games. Like, an entire genre, I would say visual novels as a whole, maybe didn't get their start, but definitely, like, got a huge boost from the popularity of these Famicom Detective Club games.
According to Wikipedia, and I didn't know this, that the game was actually written by Yoshio Sakamoto.
That's right.
And, of course, you might remember him from Metroid. So,
yep.
Woo! It is interesting, like, you look at the history of Nintendo, and I've always said this before, and I won't wax poetic now, but... Looking back at the history of Nintendo from, like, the 80s Nintendo, when you have Famicom and you have all that, you're looking at like a parallel universe. Like, if you grew up in the 80s, if you grew up American, you grew up with the Nintendo Entertainment System, you grew up with Mario and Donkey Kong, and, oh, I love Nintendo, Nintendo. But you look back at Nintendo in Japan, and it's like a different, like a metaverse, like a different,
right.
a different path. Like, so much was different, but the same.
Yeah, this is all stuff we're starting to see now, that Nintendo has become a little bit more open to localizing these older games and bringing over franchises that we never would have expected to see.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like, I mean, just look at the history of like Famicom Detective Club. You know, these games were released on floppy disks. They were released on satellite downloads. It's crazy. It's completely different.
Absolutely, 100%. So yeah, I mean, if you have a Switch and you're interested in this kind of slice of history, it's definitely worth a look. A little bit pricier than I might have expected, but it's well worth the price. I mean, the graphics are great. The writing is solid.
Don't you, if you buy them both, you get a discount? Is that it?
You get a little discount. I think like $10 off the top if you buy them both together.
Yeah, Nintendo is not known for their cheap games. Just you know what to expect.
Yeah, it's never going down in price, by the way, if you're used to that. The last game I want to talk about, actually, is a little indie game that I got sent, I want to say, a week or two ago, about a week and a half ago.
I think I know what you're going to say.
I think you do, too. Yeah. So our friends over at Novi PR, Luis, I think the guy's name was, he sent us a copy of Kung Fu Jesus and the Search for Celestial Gold. Have you ever heard of this game?
Like Biomutant, you are the one who introduced me to this game after it had already been sent to us. So I apologize, Luis, but you do great work, but I don't know Kung Fu Jesus.
So Kung Fu Jesus, oh man, where do I start? Kung Fu Jesus is a musician from Scotland. He's done a few live shows. He's got a few albums. He's actually on Spotify if anyone ever listens to his music. It's kind of a funky slash folk kind of feel to it. And for God knows what reason, he decided to make a Streets of Rage RPG-style kart racing shoot-em-up brawler video game.
Sure.
Imagine a version of Streets of Rage that lasts for 60 hours.
Too much of a good thing?
Okay, now imagine like it only sort of kind of works, and every so often the game makes you like play a vertical scrolling shooter and you can't progress with the game until you beat it. And I mean, not just a couple levels, not just like one. No, I mean it's a full game and you have to beat the game.
If you just described this to me, it sounds like No More Heroes a little bit.
Like a little bit.
Just a little bit, but not as good.
What if after you finish the vertical scrolling shooter section, you then have to go go-kart racing and you can't progress until you win the go-kart racing? And it's like actual go-kart racing. It's not like we crammed this into our engine. It's like you are playing a different game again. And you know, I'm not going to lie and say that all of this is good at all. But what I am going to say is a couple things, actually. First off, like, I'll fully admit the game is not fantastic from a gameplay perspective. But what is cool is kind of getting this. It's so different. It's unlike anything else that I've ever played. We're getting this kind of glimpse into this guy's life, into his head. He fully admitted to me. I've been emailing with the creator, actually. Told me straight up that a lot of the game was based on his experiences taking mushrooms.
Yeah, there's a review from Rock Paper Shotgun. They called it Streets of Rage on mescaline. So
yes, at one point Kung Fu Jesus has to fight Antifa. But Antifa has a giant bio-mutant golem with them that wants to fight Kung Fu Jesus, but he has to defeat Antifa because they're backed by the Illuminati, and in order to beat them, he has to take a fly agaric mushroom because he heard that the Vikings would take those to go into combat trances.
So this is an example of someone who is either taking drugs or not taking enough drugs.
He is absolutely just hopped up on whatever when he made this. But again, I've talked to the guy a few times. We went back and forth. He is very open to improvements to his game. He's just really thrilled that somebody wants to talk to him about his game, I think. I'm actually surprised the Rock Paper Shotgun reviewed it, if you can believe that.
Maybe we'll give him a chance to share some of his wisdom on this podcast.
I would love to have this guy for an interview sometime. Yeah. And if you're thinking about playing Kung Fu Jesus, I am required by law as a game journalist to say that you probably shouldn't, but as a human being who likes, you know, this crazy outsider art type stuff where you're really just this man loves his game in a way that people love their children and it's got a lot of soul as a result.
Well,
if you got an extra like $15 laying around, it's worth the time.
Here's the thing, Corey. When you told me indie game, let's be honest, when you hear indie game now, you're thinking top down, pixelated, cheap, like made from a template, right?
When I talk about indie games, typically that means, you know, we've taken a popular take on something and added in pixel graphics or whatever, and we're gonna maybe kickstart it or whatever. I mean, this is none of that.
Yeah, this is none of that. This almost looks like a PS3 game, to be honest with
you. Yeah, this is wild. I mean, I'm pretty sure most of those assets are bought or maybe stolen. I doubt stolen, maybe.
Yeah, you know,
Yeah. No, it's some wild and crazy stuff. Like, you definitely, like, look up a YouTube playthrough or whatever if you haven't, because it is mind-blowing. Anyway, I can't stay on Kung Fu Jesus for too long. Though, again, he's on Spotify. The music is pretty good. Like, that's the one thing I kept thinking. Like, man, this game is garbage. Well, this music is friggin' great.
That's the thing, though. You tell me, you've said it before, you don't really listen to music when you play games. And I tell you, you're crazy, because some of the best things about these games are the music.
I mean, what it feels like is that this whole game is just like a new concept album that he made, and also just kind of stapled like a game on top of it, where you've got this dude fighting Antifa and the Illuminati, and sometimes you go and you watch TV in the game, and he's like written up TV episodes for the game, and you can just sit and listen to him.
It reminds me of a little bit of when the Wolfenstein, what was the last Wolfenstein game that came out? The one where you go into space. Not Youngblood, the one before Youngblood. Was it Wolfenstein 3?
The New Order.
The New Order. And, you know, there was an attempt, again, we'll get into this, but only slightly. There was an attempt to say, oh, this is some commentary on the administration or whatever. And then you actually play the game and you realize that's none of that stuff. It's just, this is just people being crazy.
Yeah, this guy is just friggin' nuts, and it comes out in his game, and it's an experience that's not like pretty much anything else you'll find on Steam. So again, as a game journalist, I have to say it's not a great game from a gameplay perspective, but from just an experience perspective, probably worth your $15 or however much you want.
Never heard Corey be this excited about a game. Like, there's something, like, I'm telling you right now, Corey would never take a payoff. Like, this game must be special if he's raving about it this much. This is crazy. What'd you do with Corey?
I've told friends about it. I've told family about it. Everybody's like, oh, what? Did you play more Kung Fu Jesus? What happened this time? And I'm like, oh, Kung Fu Jesus had to battle the spiritual manifestation of psilocybin mushrooms.
I think.
Because that happens.
We'll talk after the show, but maybe we'll have to get Mr. Jesus Creator on the program. So,
yeah, maybe so.
Any more big hitters for the month of May?
For the month of May, let me check again just to be sure. I've been playing a lot of stuff lately. Other stuff that came out, Wonder Boy. Wonder Boy, Asha, and Monster World.
Yeah.
I've been playing it on Switch. It's not bad. It definitely needs a little bit more time in the oven with regards to the translation, because that's a mess.
There's been a lot of Wonder Boy. In fact, full disclosure on this podcast, we've interviewed some of the creators of some of the Wonder Boy remakes. They're hit and miss, though, because they're not done with like a singular vision. We talk about NPD. It used to be the focus of this entire podcast until we both decided, nah, let's not do that. So NPD, National Purchase Diary, full disclosure, we have friends over there who like this podcast very much. That doesn't mean we can't be critical of you.
That's true. So let's go ahead and talk about the big games that came out.
For April 2021.
For April, right.
So let's do this really quickly. So real quick. For the first time since the pandemic, sales went slightly down a little bit. Total sales were down 2%.
That was around the time people are starting to get let out a little bit. Like, we're slowly but surely starting to see life come back to normal. So I'm not surprised by that.
The decline came from hardware, and there's no surprise for that. All those PS5s and everything that were selling really, really well are not capable of being sold because you spongers got them.
Yeah, scalpers.
I call them spongers because I can't use the word I want to use for them. All the speculation is that Nintendo is going to bring out a new console. I don't know. I've been wrong before, but I don't feel like I'm wrong about this.
Speculation is that it's called the Switch Pro. And
Switch Pro.
What they should have called it, and hear me out on this one, they should have called it the Super Nintendo Switch.
Or Super Switch.
Doesn't that sound good, right? Super Switch.
Well, I'll say this. I think one of the greatest things Nintendo's done in the 21st century is name their console the Wii. I think it was genius. I think it was perfect alliteration. Everything about it was great. I think the worst decision they ever made was calling their follow-up the Wii U, because it was stupid.
Yeah, it was stupid.
So same as Nintendo, Super Nintendo. They've done well before with names. They've also done terrible with names. So I don't know. It seems as if they're going to call it the Switch Pro. That seems likely, but it's kind of boring and predictable, and I don't think Nintendo would do boring and predictable, but we don't know yet. Speculation. So anyway.
So let's talk about the game specifically then. A lot of the stuff is stuff you would expect. We got Breath of the Wild, Pokemon, Valhalla, Smash Brothers, so on and so forth. The new and exciting stuff starts around number 9. It Takes Two. Have you heard of this one?
I've heard of this one, have not played it, but I heard people like this game. So
people like this game a lot. This is essentially the follow-up to a game that came out a few years ago called A Way Out. And
yes.
This game is interesting. Because it is required that you play it in co-op. It is, you cannot play this by yourself.
Split screen too, right?
Yeah, split screen. Yeah. It's so co-op, in fact, that if you own a copy of the game, you can allow another player into your game to play. They don't have to own it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we had a few PopStar people who played the game like that. Because full disclosure, I think they sent us a copy of the Way Out. So.
Yeah, it's a real solid game from what I've heard. I've not played It Takes Two, but from everything I've seen, makes it look good, and the reviews have been great, so it's something I'll have to give a shot at some point.
Okay.
Number eight is a game we mentioned a little bit ago, Returnal. Great third-person shooter, roguelite kind of thing. PS5 exclusive, if you can believe that. So the fact that it debuted so high is kind of impressive because nobody has PS5.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. A lot of people have PS5s. Let's be fair here. The PS5 has been very, very successful, despite console, the lack of availability, the fact that there's a chip shortage, the high price, everything. The PS5 seems to be doing very, very well, like gangbusters well. And I will happily
tell you, it's a great system.
Well, everybody tells me that, okay, you have it, a couple other Popstar people have it, and my friends have it, but I'll say this. Everybody says the same thing, Corey. It's just a better version of the PS4. And for them,
yeah,
that's perfectly fine.
Absolutely. So proceeding from there, again, it's great that it did so well. Proceeding from there, Monster Hunter Rise, a Switch exclusive. Not surprising that it did great. Did a little bit less great than the month previous, but that's not surprising. Going up from there, new stuff that we've not heard of before, Nier Replicant, which is a remake of Nier from 2009, I believe.
But I think you skipped something, though. I think you skipped Mortal Kombat 11. I want to talk about that real quick, because this game is going on how many years old now? 2019?
Yeah, about 2 years, I think. You're right.
And you were a big evangelist of this game, and
I still love it, yeah.
But you converted me, because I didn't quite care for Mortal Kombat 10. I thought they jiggered the game. But this is, I believe, Mortal Kombat 11 may be the best-selling fighting game in American history.
I think so.
And what's funny about it is that I actually think this game is innovated in a way that no one talks about. The movie came out. The movie did very well on VOD. I don't think it hit theaters, or if it did, it did minuscule business. We have a review of it if you want to see it. Have you seen it yet, the movie?
I have. It's a pretty solid movie.
It's not terrible, but it's not great, but it doesn't need to be great. But
it's the kind of dumb popcorn action movie that I didn't think Hollywood was allowed to make anymore. So it's nice to see.
It's better than you think it is. And yep. Mortal Kombat started becoming like an alternative to Smash Brothers in the way they started introducing all these wacky characters that didn't involve the universe, like RoboCop, Rambo, and Sylvester Stallone as Rambo. And then you saw Fortnite start doing this a little bit. And then you see all these other games start doing this a little bit. But I think Mortal Kombat may have been the progenitor of a lot of this. Where you just have these wildly, like, you have RoboCop versus Rambo, and that's legitimate. That's canon in the Mortal Kombat universe.
Yeah, that's a thing that can happen, absolutely.
Yep, and now you see, you know who you see doing it now? You know who's Rambo's coming now? Call of Duty Warzone. Like, they're all doing it now. I don't know if that says how cheap Sylvester Stallone is. I dig it. I think it's fun. Mortal Kombat.
Yep, Mortal Kombat. Anyway, proceeding from there, Nier Replicant, a remake of Nier from, I think 2009 or so. Again, another solid game. Been playing it on PS5 lately. Looks great. Sounds great. If you're fond of Nier Automata, which a lot of people are, this is a great place to learn a little bit more about where it came from and what it plays like.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Outriders.
Interesting.
I'm shocked that it's still doing so well.
Yeah,
honestly,
it's holding up really well. So,
yeah, it's one of those looty, shooty kind of games, so it's not surprising. We'll just like hopping on and grinding with it. Number two, new Pokemon Snap. That's not surprising even a little. Sorry, it's number three, is new Pokemon Snap.
Yeah.
But I was correct when I said it's not surprising, because everybody's been wanting a Pokemon Snap sequel since the first game came out back in God knows when. And now here it is. And it's basically everything you wanted. It is more Pokemon Snap. There are more features. There's more Pokemon. There's more places to go through. It's a lot longer. If you like the original game, take a look.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, unsurprisingly, is Black Ops Cold War.
Woo! Never goes away.
It's going to be here until the next one comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, we have MLB The Show 21, which I have not played.
We mentioned this game last month, and our prediction came true. This is a Sony-published game that is available on the Xbox, which is why I think it's number one this month. And I want to get into this real quick, because this is my big deal for the month. Sony has been doing some interesting stuff with first-party games. Mainly, there are no longer first-party games. Sony is increasingly putting their big, heavy hitters on the PC and on Xbox. And this is a trend. Have you seen this?
I'm not.
Yeah, so, for example, you're playing Days Gone right now. Was a PlayStation exclusive. Now it's PC.
It's on PC.
We had, what was the one with the redheaded chick? Horizon Zero Dawn?
Horizon. Yes,
yeah.
Horizon.
It is now a PC game.
Getting a sequel soon, by the way, on the PS5.
We are getting a sequel soon, and we'll be on PC at some point. Uncharted is coming to PC. Have you heard about this? Uncharted 4.
I did not hear about that, actually. That's exciting.
Yeah, that's exciting. But that is technically like the PlayStation equivalent of like Zelda. Like that was the marquee PlayStation exclusive, and now it's going multi-platform. So, I mean, at some point, I mean, what is the PlayStation at this point? I mean, you're going to have these games come 3 or 4 or 5 years later, but they are coming. Like this is a new thing for Sony. This is
Yeah,
interesting.
that's the same thing that happens with the Xbox. Like there are very few Xbox specific games anymore.
But again, I want to be clear though. There's a time gap between PlayStation stuff. There's always like at least I think what was the first one? Death Stranding, that was a year, and then we finally saw it. Then, but Days Gone, what was that? 2018? How is Days Gone on PC, by the way?
Great. It's a lot better, actually. So one of the things that came out on PS5 was Days Gone, actually. They updated it to use the increased more powerful hardware in the PS5. And it's nice. It's a little bit of an upgrade. Does not compare to Days Gone on PC. Days Gone on PC is a solid game. I would have initially said that, it's pretty good, kind of generic. Maybe you can skip it if you want, but it's definitely a must play now.
I liked the game just fine. I saw its deficiencies where it was trying too hard, and I still think Days Gone is some of the worst voice acting I've ever heard in a game.
I
Like, at
see.
least in a modern game, and unskippable cinematics, the ones that don't matter, the ones you want to skip, you can't do it. But the zombie horde made it worth it because the zombie horde is thrilling and it's one of the most fun things I've done in this generation. I want a game built around the zombie horde because you got to admit, that's pretty cool.
Pretty cool, right? Especially now that you have it on PC, so the games would creep down to like single digit frame rates when it happens.
Hey, I got my ancient video card. I got a 1060 Ti, which, by the way, I've been told has been reissued because of chip shortages. So I
The cool
kind
thing
of.
about this is, actually about the chip shortages, they're trying to do something about the access to video cards by making some of the newer video cards, the 30,000 series,
I
or
saw that.
the 3,000 series. They started releasing these cards with a lower hash rate, LHR version. Basically, they are artificially worse at coin mining, but otherwise are completely fine.
Yeah, this is an example of chip manufacturers. I assume you mean Nvidia specifically. They don't understand their own market. Like, they're literally sitting on a technology that if they were able to get supply line better, if they were to have so many shortages, then they could have the best of both worlds. But they're not doing it, and so I don't know. It won't end well for somebody. But that's the top 20. All around, not a spectacular month, but an interesting month, quality month. Let's go back and talk about stuff you want to look forward to for June 2021.
So stuff we got in June. There's a few pretty exciting games. We've got, I think I mentioned Edge of Eternity, which is this big, very nice looking indie JRPG. Beautiful game, like shockingly good looking for what it is. Looks like it could have been from Square Enix themselves. It's in early access right now if you want to try it, and I'm pretty sure your saves carry over. After that, June 10th, we've got the re-release of Final Fantasy VII Remake. It's called FF7 Remake Intergrade. It's on PS5, adds in a bunch of new content, probably runs even better than the original did. I'm definitely looking forward to checking it out. We've got more Darius Burst games coming out in June 11 for the PS4 and the Switch. I believe these are the 3D ones that were not in the original set.
For those who don't know, Darius, the space fish.
Yes, the Space Fish game,
Space
absolutely.
Fish. Okay, good.
And on the same day, you've got Guilty Gear Strive, which I am super hyped for. I played
Finally.
both the Yeah, I know, right? They keep delaying it. I played both the betas. I love the game. Cannot wait. It's going to be my new Mortal Kombat, I guarantee it.
You know what's fun about that, though? They've been really doing the beta testing on this. So
yeah,
I don't think I've ever seen a fighting game be in beta this long. This is crazy.
And there's significant changes between the tests, so it's not like it's just in beta for the sake of marketing. Like they are actually making changes to the game based on what they see in beta. It's really cool. On that same day, also, is Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart for the PS5, first Ratchet and Clank game since the one based on the film.
This is a killer app for the PlayStation 5. This is the one they demonstrated the system's power with, and they demonstrated the super speedy hard drive. So we'll see what happens.
Yep, got some more stuff coming out later, actually. June 24th is Alex Kidd Miracle World DX.
Oh,
That's
goodness.
the one with the rock, paper, scissors. So look forward to that.
I remember buying that game on the Genesis.
Nice.
Yeah.
Also nice, a Legend of Mana remaster coming out PC, PS4, Switch. I love this game. One of my favorite games ever made. Cannot wait to play this remaster.
Yeah, you are obsessed with this, I will
I
say that.
love Legend of
So.
Mana. It's so I love it almost as much as I love Kung Fu Jesus. It's that good.
Almost, but not quite.
Yep. Also, June 24th, Roguebook, which is a new roguelite card gamey kind of thing. It's interesting. Not because of that. I mean, there's dozens of those these days. This one's interesting because Richard Garriott, the designer of Magic the Gathering, was involved.
Oh, nice. When he's not doing Bitcoin. No, I'm
Exactly.
just kidding. I know they're separate, but not really.
A day after that, we have the next big Bandai Namco game, Scarlet Nexus. There is a demo for this. It feels a little janky. Looking forward to trying the game regardless. Hope they tighten it up a little bit between now and then.
Well, I mean, the game's called Scarlet Nexus. I mean, what could go wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. And finally, for all you Japanese game RPG fans out there, end of June is Disgaea 6 on the Switch.
That's a re-release, right?
No, it's a new one.
Is it exclusive?
Yeah, for now anyway. I think over in Japan there's a PS4 version, and they might bring that over eventually, but here in America, yeah, it's exclusive.
Yeah, I'm not really big on the JRPG scene anymore, but didn't Disgaea start off as a Saturn game?
Disgaea started off as a PS2 game.
PS2?
So, actually, Disgaea is the distant sequel to a game from the PlayStation called Rhapsody, which was the only musical RPG that you will ever play. It is a...
By the way, I got to apologize for all my JRPG fans. I was thinking of Grandia. I'm sorry.
Nice. Yeah. Disgaea is a distant sequel to Rhapsody, which was an RPG that was also like a stage musical. As in, periodically, the characters would stop engaging in dialogue and perform a song and dance number and then resume with the dialogue.
Yeah, so West Side Story, but with the Japanese flair.
Exactly.
Woo!
Yeah, that's pretty much what I got.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about that. Follow-up news real quick. I just want to be clear. So we're getting a new Time Splitters.
That's pretty cool.
Did you hear about this? Free Radical. Because you mentioned Time Splitters last month, and it was prescient. Remember there was a hidden Time Splitters game in – what was the game where the Koreans took over America? Homefront?
That was Homefront.
Yep. So apparently some members of Free Radical Design, including the founder Steve Ellis and David York – by the way, you might remember some of these guys when they were part of Rare, when they developed GoldenEye. And so they are returning in Deep Silver. They're reviving them. And so they announced a new Time Splitters is coming out. So we'll see. And if you could explain this to me, we can close this off on a high note. What the hell's going on with Pokemon cards and protests? What's going on with Pokemon cards at Walmart and Target? Because I hear a lot about this.
So the big issue with the Pokemon cards is that obviously they're released in limited quantities. They're a physical object. There's not an infinite number of them. So what would happen is that scalpers would go to Walmart, line up like in the dead of night before the store opened, go in, buy them all every time a new set released. And they'd take those cards and they'd resell them on eBay or whatever and get super rich. And finally, both because, I mean, that's kind of scummy, and because it was causing like physical altercations between customers, as you might expect. This is America, after all.
Sure.
Walmart and I think also Target have just, like, they're not selling the cards anymore. Straight up, you cannot buy the cards at Walmart or Target anymore. They are gone. They're all delisted. Not worth the trouble.
You see, this is probably why Sony and Microsoft didn't want to sell the new consoles, like, at the stores too.
Completely reasonable. I mean, at some point, I really think at some point we're going to have a reckoning with the whole scalper situation. And I think we're starting to see it happening because if you want an Xbox Series X, for instance, you are now able to get on your Xbox One and pre-order it specifically for your Xbox One. Like, it is attached to your console.
Mm-hmm. You know how Micro Center and a few other stores handled the chip shortage crisis? We talked about this with the graphics cards.
Yeah.
Yeah, they massively increased the price per purchase. So you can look out there, like certain stores were selling graphics cards for $20,000 and higher.
Yep.
Could you imagine if someone was dumb enough to do that? You just got to sell one. You just got to sell one.
Yep.
But so we'll see how this goes. It's nice to see people fighting over Pokemon cards instead of like bullets or porno. But
it's funny too, because people talk about this like, oh, this is an example of how bad society is. I mean, it was probably like two or three dudes. Relax.
Yeah, they like to take things and puff it up. You know how media is. And final note, because we are not going to waste a shred of brain cells on this, E3 2021 is back in some mutated online form.
In some virtual form that I love going to E3. If it comes back to physical next year, I'd love to go again. I don't think I care much about this.
I think the pandemic has made a lot of these shows obsolete, to be honest. I think it was the final nail in the coffin where it demonstrated that they weren't necessary, for better or for worse.
Right.
But I did see that they didn't go down without a fight. Like, E3 is one of those shows, and this is all I'm going to say about it. Like you, I have fond memories of it. Like you, I've attended. And like, I don't know, unlike you, though, the modern show is a shadow of its former self.
Sure.
But E3 is one of those shows that did everything wrong before the pandemic. And so I've said this before, I put this on Twitter, I would hate to say the pandemic killed the show, because it so obviously deserves to, people know that this show should have killed itself.
E3 at the time, it became a con. Like a con is like an invention, not like a con is in a scam. Though, kind of.
Well, the problem is you have these people there that, especially small developers, who this is their only chance to get press notice, like to get actual press notice, and to be swarmed with fans and cosplayers, like thinking it's like PAX or Comic-Con, is really bad for these people. It's a waste of money and time.
Let me tell you, man, the smell. Whew.
Yeah, the smell, but that you get used to the smell, but what you don't get used to is the shamelessness. Like the people who do the scavenger hunts, oh, I gotta find this, gotta find this, and they're clogging up your lines, and they're doing all this crap. And but I noticed they tried to sell online access to this again. It didn't go over very well. So
yeah,
E3, just never stop being who you are. So,
yep.
Shameless.
Anyway, I think it's all we got, though.
I think that's pretty much it. So you have been listening to the Pop Zara podcast. This is the State of Gaming podcast from your Pop Zara pals. You've been listening about a month of May 2021. All the good stuff. No real bad stuff, which is nice. Not even a lot of controversy. Big stuff. A lot of stuff coming out next month. This is Nathan Evans, managing editor of Pop Zara, and the other fellow with a melodious, bellicose voice with the dulcet tones has been Mr. Corey G-Man Gallagher. Corey, thank you once again for a month of frivolity and fun. And by the way,
1 second, gotta look up what bellicose means.
Yeah?
That just makes it sound like I'm angry.
I mean, it could be applied to all those things. I'm thinking of synonyms for melodious. But I said
anyway.
Dulcet tones.
You like well, that works.
Okay, Mr. G-Man, Corey, thank you once again. A lot of stuff to look up to, a lot of stuff to find out. Maybe we'll do some Jesus stuff later. We shall see. But until then, we will see everybody on the next level. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Pop Zara podcast. For more quality original content, check out popzara.com for the latest reviews and previews in gaming, movies, tech, and more.